troubled by the horrific civilian casualties. The Biden administration needs to face up to the glaring contradictions in its own war policy, call for an indefinite ceasefire, the release of all hostages, and, as I'm arguing here, resolution of the contradiction by tying further non-defensive military aid to ending the humanitarian crisis. He has the power of law behind him. National Security Memorandum 20 and the Humanitarian Aid Corridor Act, both of which empower the president to sanction governments that use U.S. arms to abuse human rights. I'm Mel Gertow for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, March 12, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Mel Gertow, Reed Johnson, and Ezra. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Catherine Carley, Faraz Siddiqui, Edwin J. Vieira, Roz Brown, and Jill Freitas. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
Hey, this is Dr. Demento, and you are listening to the KBOO News, the only news you need.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Business can be good, great even, but it often takes more than that to survive and to thrive. Elise Schumach is the proprietor of the Rose City Book Pub on Northeast Fremont, down the street from Irving Park. The community around the book pub came together over the weekend to put on an auction to benefit the place they love after Schumach was hit with some unexpected bills in December. KBOO reporter Birdie caught up with Schumach to learn more about the auction and the book pub that inspired it.
Even though I myself am not much of a reader, I do love the idea of a book pub. Give us a little history. What was your inspiration in the beginning? What brought you to Fremont Street?
So I was living in Los Angeles, but I'm originally from Portland, and it was time for me to come home. And a friend of mine suggested, just as a fun idea, no plans of doing it, he said, wouldn't it be cool if there was a bookstore that was also a bar? And I thought about it for maybe a day, and I said, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going home.
Awesome. That is really, you know, it's a great idea, I think. So I hear you are holding an auction right now to raise money after the pandemic and the recent winter storms kept everybody at home. How's it going so far? What kind of things are people able to bid on, and how can our listeners and community members help you out?
Yeah, so it's incredible. So we extended the online silent auction until 10 o'clock tonight. But last night we had the other half of the items were in a live auction, which was so unbelievably fun. And I have to say that I've been to a lot of benefits, and I've done a lot of silent auctions where you know just write your name on the piece of paper. This was something else, and I think people need to bring them back. It was so much more fun. And also, in order to do it, we made a bunch of paddles. And I do want to make sure that the nonprofits in town know that we have a collection of paddles that we're happy to lend out. And also, I have a really, really good prize wheel. I've been intending to make it known to the nonprofit communities that I've got these for your next fundraiser.
That sounds so awesome. I love that. Aside from this current fundraiser, the Rose City Book Pub hosts different musical, artistic, and literary events all the time. Is there an upcoming event in particular that you're really excited about? Maybe a concert?
Well, we have music all the time. Tonight is going to be Left on 10th, and that's our house band. They play every other Tuesday, but when they play at our place, it's different from their big shows. I call them the house band because it's a little bit like they're just at their own home. and they sort of screw around and they play with some of the styles that they like that don't fit with their general sound for their band. So people who are fans of their band should totally check them out at the Book Pub also, because it's a different experience. And then Thursday we've got Morris McClellan. I think he's maybe in the vein of folk. Oh, I have music from 7 till midnight on Friday. It's like 5 different bands. It's going to be great. But then the other thing that's starting tonight, I'm very, very excited about this. We host iftar dinners during Ramadan. Now, we started today instead of yesterday, even though Ramadan started yesterday, because we had the auction yesterday. And then also the guest chef works at his regular job on Mondays. So every Tuesday, we're going to be launching this wonderful, wonderful dinner at sunset on Tuesdays. But then it's the special in the subsequent days until we run out. And this meal is so delicious. It's kebsa, and you have a choice of lamb or chicken, and that's a Saudi dish. And then tabbouleh, tzatziki, hummus, pita, and one date, and then we're also making lentil soup.
Wow, that sounds delicious.
Yeah, and it's huge because it's for people who haven't eaten all day.
Right, yeah. So, yeah, tell me a little bit more about Ramadan and iftar as holidays.
Yeah, so the people that celebrate fast during the sunlight hours, they have a big meal just before sunrise and they have a big meal at sunset. Luckily right now it's coming kind of more in the winter. It's really rough when it's in the summer because that's a much longer daylight period of time.
Yeah.
And this is total true fasting, no water or anything. But it's usually a family holiday. It goes on for a month. And so some of the Muslim students approached us and asked if we, like college students, they asked if we would host the dinner, because a lot of the halal restaurants and halal food carts close down for the month because they're home with family and then they don't have any place to eat.
Right.
And even though a lot of them have understandably recognized that they can't always eat halal, don't tell their moms, but they do try to eat halal during the holy period of time. Sort of like, I know some Jewish folks that are kosher light and then kosher for real during Passover.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really love that, you know, Rose City Book Pub has brought together, you know, not only these beautiful people of the Muslim community, but also the bands as well. I love that you said that that's your house band, and you know, that's such a compliment, honestly. I think you must have a lot of respect for these people. That's really awesome.
I really do. They're really, really great guys. They were a college band in Montana, and then they moved here to the bigger city right before the pandemic. And then everything got ruined. One of them works for me and one of them does a contract job for me.
Nice.
And they're just great guys.
That's really beautiful. I love that. So I know Rose City Book Pub partners with local businesses to create a rotating tap and wine list. And I'm curious about which ones. Do you want to give any of them a shout out or talk about some of your favorite drinks?
Yeah, we have 18 taps. And with that, we get to have a lot of fun. If you have 6 or 7, then you sort of have to hit the main hits and it's hard to play around. So we do like to do things like sours and gozas and, you know, these sort of alternative styles. We have on tap one all the time. We have Chicha Morada made by Kichana Kitchens, who is really just this really nice guy who is originally from Lima. And that one's a non-alcoholic drink.
Nice.
And it's an ancient thing from Peru. I think probably my favorite cider maker in town is Christine Bauman Cider. And then I am personally a big fan of Bale Breaker. They make a lot of IPAs because they are also fourth generation hop farmers.
Wow, that is really incredible. I love that you're seeking out these local businesses and helping everybody out. It's like community coming together and mutual aid. It's really beautiful.
Yeah. And then when it comes to wine, it's not as much local because we're not a $15 glass of wine kind of place. And a lot of the Oregon wines are more expensive. So that one's not as local, but our liquor selection is mostly local brands.
I bet it's expensive because we got the good stuff, you know? Going back to what we were talking about, with the events, I love that the pub hosts open mic nights for poetry and storytelling as well. I am sure it really helps everybody feel super included and have a sense of community. So I'm super curious to know what Story Time for Adults is all about. I can imagine it's really thought-provoking and captivating.
Yeah, that one is, so that's David Loftus, and he's been doing this for a long time in different settings and different places. He's a storyteller in that sense. He chooses some passages from different books, classics a lot of times, and then just reads, like being read to for bedtime.
That's really wholesome.
Yeah, it's really wholesome.
That's nice. There are so many inventive and creative people here in Portland. I hear that people can actually come to writing workshops at the Rose City Book Pub. What does that normally look like? Any fun themes?
Yeah, we have a few of those. So the last Tuesday of every month from 6 to 8, Jeannie Faulkner hosts a drop-in writing workshop. So this is one that is not meant to be sequential. You can come once, you can come once every 6 months, and you're not going to feel like you're out of step. But a lot of people do come every single time.
Nice.
And that one is all positive. So no criticism, only positive support. And
nice.
Then we recently started a fantasy and sci-fi writing. It's almost like a writing club. I think everyone comes and uses that energy of each other together. And then I think that maybe they read their passages if they feel like it. And that was something that Giacomo, who works for me, started. And then a guy named Sean, who's a regular customer, has agreed to help facilitate that.
That's really cool. You host community art days as well. What was one of your favorite projects or crafts that you've either seen from members of the community or worked on yourself?
Oh, that one is such a fun one. So that is on, I think, second Sundays from 2 to 6. And that's Tasha. She's super sweet. She got a grant, just maybe $1,000, to be able to buy resources for this. One of the best ones we did was stained glass.
Nice.
And people were able to get all the way done with a small stained glass project in just the 4 hours. And then one time, there was knitting lessons. And then recently we did Valentine cards.
Aww.
So it's big and small. It's, you know, big, complicated things that you need some assistance on. And then, you know, the Valentine's card I made for my husband was really just, well, it looked like I could have made it a long time ago. It was not better than my second grade work.
You made it with love, you know? Mm-hmm. That's all that matters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are there any events for kids coming up or that you've held in the past that kind of stick in your mind?
Yeah, well, so the Community Art Day is, I like to say it's child-friendly but not child-centric.
Mm.
And even when we did the stained glass, there was sort of the tissue paper stained glass for kids.
Nice.
So that one is really a good one for them. The kids love bluegrass, and that's the every other Tuesday that's not left on 10th. They get up and dance.
Nice.
They can't stop that. I don't think I have anything particular coming up that is child-focused, but a lot of things are child-friendly, and we are open to minors until 9 p.m.
Nice. Good to know. I absolutely love and respect the fact that you've put so much effort into bringing our community together. You know, it's really incredible. Do you have any final thoughts or anything you want our listeners to know?
Yeah, I guess I am so grateful for what happened with this auction.
Yeah.
And we got so many submissions from so many really creative, interesting people, and it felt like a community showcase of what artistic, creative, interesting things people are doing. And I was also so surprised by how many people were contributing things that were going to take time, but also where they were going to be spending time with whoever won.
Hmm.
And they trusted that the people that come to the book pub, whoever it was going to be somebody that they would like to spend some time with.
Interesting. So yeah, what were you, what kind of things were people able to bid on?
So some of the things like what I just described there of spending time with a stranger, there is an espresso service,
mm-hmm.
For two with this guy who is a coffee researcher. There's genealogy research, family history research, and then bouldering lessons, rock climbing lessons. Also, two people said they're inviting two people over for a gluten-free vegan dinner at their home.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I love that they're, you know, events, you know, and experiences rather than just objects. That's really awesome.
Yeah. And then the silent auction online, and there's a link on my website, that's still live until 10 o'clock tonight. And there are a couple of really interesting things there. One is 10 hours of private investigator work. And he's a regular customer and super sweet, very gentle. And then there's also a $500 gift certificate to Mattress World.
Nice.
And there's also some jade plant baby sprouts.
Oh, cool.
It's all over the place.
Yeah, that's really, you know, there's definitely going to be somebody out there who's going to go crazy for those little sprouts. Elise, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me in.
That was KBOO reporter Birdie speaking with Elise Schumach, the owner of the Rose City Book Pub. The community around the establishment put on a benefit auction this past weekend after Schumach was hit with some unexpected bills in December. You're listening to KBOO News In Depth. We'll have more after this musical break.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. We're turning our attention now to national news. It's well known that former President Donald Trump has used some pretty inflammatory anti-immigrant rhetoric in his public statements. And that has certainly been reported on. But author and activist Max Elbaum says there's much more to the issue than Trump as an individual. He spoke with KBOO reporter and KPFA weekend news anchor David Rosenberg.
You don't think that Trump is being taken quite seriously enough, or at least the movement that he represents isn't being taken seriously enough? There's certainly been a lot of publicity about the kind of rhetoric he uses, but you think that the coverage should be deeper than that. What do you mean by that?
Donald Trump as an individual has his own particular quirks and his own particular narcissism and pathology. But the real problem is he has gathered around him forces that are deeply rooted in U.S. life that have a whole history going back in the most recent period to the backlash against the gains of the 1960s. And they've coalesced into a social bloc that has a different agenda for the country than the listeners of KPFA radio.
Would you say a different agenda than even the Reagan people or the Bush people or Newt Gingrich, people like that?
Yes. Those people were imperialists and they were conservative. but the Republican Party has been taken over by a bloc that is a direct descendant of the Confederacy in the 19th century, direct descendant of those who opposed racial integration and racial equality in the 1960s. Also a key component of that bloc are the wealthiest right-wing billionaires, the fossil fuel industry, who've never accepted the New Deal, never accepted trade union rights, have been hostile to democracy and majority rule for decades, are still a belief in U.S. hegemony, and are in denial about climate change. So those things have become the dominant force, a coalition of the most right-wing sections of the capitalist class and the layers of the population that are the most invested in racial and gender hierarchies and a theocratic vision of the country. Basically, a white Christian nationalist bloc has taken over the Republican Party. And they're using immigration as their battering ram. It's been since 2015, since Trump announced, immigrants have been a key target of the dehumanization effort to blame the problems of the country and the world on people of color, on people from so-called shithole countries, to use Donald Trump's language, and to scapegoat some of the most vulnerable and marginalized people for the problems that are rooted in the structure of U.S. capitalism.
What are the Democrats doing about that? How are they opposing it, if at all? Biden was on the border along with Trump. He has a different message. Do you think that message is substantially different than what Trump is saying?
Well, on immigration and on foreign policy and Gaza in particular are the biggest differences between progressives and the Biden wing of those who are opposed to the MAGA bloc. So the Biden team on immigration accepts the idea that immigration is a problem and that what we face is a so-called border crisis. The reality is what we're facing is a crisis, a global crisis of the right of people to stay home in safety and security in their countries. And the reason they can't do that has a lot to do with U.S. policies, U.S. policies of war, of exploitation, failure to do something about climate change. And in that respect, the Biden people have adopted an anti-immigrant policy, a misdiagnosis of the problem, or I would even say a cover-up of the U.S. role in this problem. And in that respect, it's not much different from Donald Trump and the MAGA bloc. And it has to be completely opposed by the progressive movement, just as Biden's policies around Israel-Palestine have to be opposed with as much energy and sophistication as we can muster.
The Biden people might say, well, look, we have to get something done. We had to compromise. We had to do something about immigration in order to get our funding for Ukraine and Israel passed. So that's what we had to do in practical political terms. How would you respond to that?
I would say that they say that's what they have to do, but they're speaking for a particular class interest when they say we, that isn't the interest that we have as progressive people who are interested in what's best for the majority of people in this country and the majority of people around the world. There is a problem of people being unable to stay home in safety, and the way that the United States should deal with it has to do with changing its foreign policy and adhering to international law on the right of people who are migrating to seek asylum if they're unsafe in their home countries. That kind of message over time, we have to fight for that kind of message because that kind of message is an integral part, is connected to the fight against authoritarian rule and the kind of fascism that U.S. style fascism that the MAGA bloc represents. There's plenty of things that can be done about the immediate problems of the large numbers of people trying to reach the United States. Those things can be done in a way that benefits the working class and does not demonize the most marginal, closing detention centers, processing, distributing the funds that will process people who are seeking asylum, adhering to international law about the right of asylum, changing U.S. foreign policy so not as many people are forced to leave their homes, granting a route to legalization and full political rights to those people who are here and have been contributing to the U.S. economy. And we have to fight around that, not just on humanitarian grounds, but on the grounds that, as New York Times article showed, immigration is a positive contributor to the growth of the U.S. economy and a positive contributor to U.S. Culture and the links between people in the United States and around the globe. And especially, we do have to reject, and in this, the Democrats are somewhat different from the Republicans, the whole racist demonization and dehumanization of immigrants that's being used as the last article I wrote in Convergence was called First They Came for the Immigrants. People think that the dehumanization of immigrants that's being spawned by the rhetoric of the MAGA bloc is going to stop with immigrants. They're kidding themselves. The whole discussion that the country is being invaded by vermin, infecting the body politic, this is the kind of traditional language of fascism that can be imposed against any group of people. So the defense of immigrants right now is a key part of the defense of democracy. And we have to pressure the Biden administration, just as people in Michigan the other day were pressuring the Biden administration around Gaza by voting uncommitted in the Democratic primary, showing that they reject MAGA and they're not interested in voting for Trump. But they want to make the case that the Biden administration is losing key parts of its potential voting base, those who want to vote against MAGA but are disgusted by Biden administration's policies, particularly around immigration and Gaza.
You think the connection between the crime and the terrible conditions that exist in other countries that cause people to come here is not being connected to U.S. foreign policy that you mentioned? Do you think the media here doesn't really cover that at all?
Occasionally it's mentioned, but it's not given its due. And it's also true, you know, the United States government is not the only bad actor in the world. You can't blame every single thing and every problem completely on the U.S. government. If you look at what's going on in Myanmar right now and in various other places in the world. So it's certainly not an exclusive U.S. problem, but the U.S. remains the dominant world power. It has a key role in the structure of the world economy. The U.S. more than any other country still shapes that. The U.S. government still shapes more than any other country the way weapons are spreading all over the world, the role of violence, militarization of problems. Again, the U.S. isn't the only problematic actor in the world, but it has a huge influence on that. And were the U.S. to shift policy, it wouldn't solve every problem in the world immediately, but it would make a huge difference in people's lives all over Latin America, Africa, Asia, the Middle East, as well as in North America and here in the United States.
Anything else you want to add to what you said?
We're in a very dangerous political time. There's been a 60-year backlash against the gains of the 1960s. That's attacked every progressive gain going back to the New Deal. Make America Great Again wants to take the country back to the 19th century, the era of Jim Crow, the Gilded Age, all wealth to the wealthy, turn over fossil fuels, turn over the energy policy to the fossil fuel industry. They've built up a big apparatus, and they now control the Republican Party, the Supreme Court, and they're already implementing their agenda in the 20-some states where they have where the Republican Party has trifectas. But we can't fight that solely through talking about the dangers of MAGA and only talking about issues where there is a clear difference between the Democrats and the Republicans, like abortion, LGBTQ rights, labor rights, and the difference between a Biden NLRB and what a Trump NLRB would be. We have to also fight for progressive change across the board and for a positive vision of where we're going. And immigration has got to be a key part of that. Defense of immigrants is an injury to one and injury to all. And right now, in this primary season and in the season before the general election, the contention between progressives and the Democratic Party leadership comes to the fore, and we have to demonstrate, we have to propagandize, and we have to defend the squad who are under attack by anti-progressives. There's a whole bunch of things we have to do so that progressives gain influence and we can shape the direction of the country in the long term.
That was author and activist Max Elbaum speaking with KBOO contributor David Rosenberg. Elbaum writes for Convergence magazine. You've been listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Thanks for being with us.
KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operation and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communication Act of 1934